How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, Monday night, June 29th, 2009, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. A lot of stuff. Dave was at the Raw, promoted by Vince McMahon, who's such a great promoter that he gave the people two Raws.
I know.
Donald Trump didn't do that.
What was amazing was that at the beginning of the show, even though like Donald Trump's not in charge, like all of his doctrines for that 1 week are now permanent.
Yeah.
Like Vince cannot bring in a new general manager. He has to bring in a celebrity every week. And what was the other one? Donald Trump did a trade behind his back.
Yeah.
So he got 15 wrestlers that are all going to different brands. And basically what it was is that guys have graduated to ECW. And instead of bringing new guys into ECW from Ford Championship Wrestling, which I don't know that they're doing or not, they're sending a whole bunch of guys to ECW that it doesn't look good for them.
A whole bunch of guys. We got nobody of any value being sent to ECW. We got Regal, I guess, and Shelton, sort of. But the Bellas?
I sense that as a give up on Shelton. You know, even though he may end up being, I mean, he may be in the ECW title picture, but. You know, that's a step down.
Let's look at this very quickly. Raw is getting Gail Kim, Alicia Fox, Jack Swagger, Evan Bourne, and Mark Henry. So the three of the biggest stars in ECW snatched away.
Yeah.
ECW gets Shelton, Gold Dust, and I guess Hornswoggle.
No, Hornswoggle was still on Raw.
Oh my God.
Because Hornswoggle was going to feud with Chavo Guerrero.
Oh, that should be fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, it was horrible, by the way. In fact, it looked like that's the main event for the Superstars a week from Thursday, because they did the match, and then when they did the match, they did the closing credits on the screen, so it's like, wow, that's the main event.
Well, thank God I don't get that show.
Yeah. Now, did they announce something tonight for, they announced a match for Superstars that they're taping tomorrow, which was Punk against Edge.
All right.
So that's tomorrow night, and I didn't see any ads for what they're doing on ECW, I mean, for SmackDown. So if they did them, they may have done one. Did they do it on TV, or do you even know?
I didn't see anything.
Okay, because they didn't do anything in the arena to plug, you know, like this Friday night on SmackDown or anything.
So Goldust, William Regal, and the Bellas are all going to ECW.
The Bellas are freaking useless. I mean, they're just, you know, you can tell they have no faith in them. I don't know what they got to get Rosa Mendez out of the ring, though. I mean,
yes.
She wasn't in the second hour, but I was like, I was feared for her life because she cannot wrestle.
No.
She's even worse, like, as bad as it looks on television, it's like, really worse when you're watching it from ringside. It's like she doesn't know what she's doing. She's also lost about 15 pounds in, like, a month.
Yeah.
You know, someone told her something, and she took it to heart, and then some, and so, you know, whatever. She's really skinny right now.
And then SmackDown gets Matt Hardy, Finlay, and all of the Hart Dynasty, Harry Boy Smith, Tyson Kidd, and Natalya. So those are your big roster switches, which they didn't even bother to tell us about on Raw. They were just like, 15 people have switched brands, and that was it.
Well, I mean, the one thing is that now Matt and Jeff can feud again.
Yippee.
If Matt can wrestle, who even knows about that? And with Fit, I mean, SmackDown already was the wrestling show, and I mean, it, you know, between Fit Finlay and Tyson Kidd and Davey Boy Smith or whatever, David Hart Smith, I mean, that's a good tag team. I mean, it's actually strengthened SmackDown where it was already strong. I don't think SmackDown was hurt at all by this. Raw, Evan Bourne, you know, in a sense it's bad because Evan Bourne was going to have more time and better matches on ECW than he's going to have on Raw. And Raw, he's going to be rushed through and he ain't going to be as good, but he'll get a lot more exposure. And Swagger, you know, I mean, it's a step up for Swagger. I mean, he's going to feud with MVP right now. And at least more people will see him, but he's not going to be. I mean, it's also like, you know, on ECW he was championship material, and on Raw, I guess he'll probably wind up with the U.S. title. I would think, you know, because Kofi's not going to have it for a long time, but he ain't going to challenge the top guys. No one's challenging the top guys, as we could tell from tonight's show.
Well, Mark Henry.
Mark Henry was interesting. Mark Henry was turned babyface, so I guess Tony Atlas probably lost his job.
That sucks to be him.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it was? Shouldn't have gotten caught in the newspapers eating those pork chops, or whatever it was, ribs, whatever it was, not eating the hot dogs, when he snuck in the hot dog in the restaurant,
man.
When he was supposed to be there teaching Mark Henry good eating habits. And Mark, by the way, does not look like he's had very good eating habits of late.
You don't say.
He's looking 420 to me.
He's gigantic.
He's gigantic. So he pinned Orton and on the first show and got a pretty good babyface reaction afterwards. Then he came out for the second show, absolute nothing. For he was with Cody Rhodes. I mean, he walked down and there was nobody cheered and nobody booed. It was like, I mean, it was the epitome of not over.
Wow.
So it's real. You know, this was an audience. I mean, you know, it was a very different audience than the last time I was at San Jose. I mean, that was only a couple months ago when Raw came. It was like the February before Mania when Flair was there with Jericho. And that audience was a lot more responsive than this audience, a little bit larger. You know, there were 10,000 people, but, you know, 8,800 paid, which has some funny stories about that, too. But just a different audience, but the most visible T-shirt by far, I saw it everywhere, was NWO T-shirts. And that will tell you about this audience. It was an audience that were fans years ago, a lot of Austin 316 shirts. Some DX shirts. I didn't see a Cena shirt all night. I'm sure they were there. I didn't see one. Didn't see too many. I didn't see kids with Rey Mysterio masks. Of course, he's on SmackDown, so maybe they wouldn't. Not very many kids there at all. The people were politely into stuff, but they were not emotionally into much of anything all night. A little bit into the Triple H Cena match, which was the main event on the second hour of taping, but it was really very, very different from I don't know, just a different crowd. It was a really weird. You know, they didn't boo baby faces and or anything like that, other than John Cena in the second hour, which was funny because in the first hour when Triple H wrestled MVP. Triple H got a nice reaction, but it was far from a superstar reaction. MVP got no reaction at all, and the match was pretty much dead. And then the second show, MVP got himself over with his mic work. I mean, he wasn't over coming out, but by the end, he was pretty over. And Cena, who was by far the most over guy in the first hour, was booed. They booed the hell out of him in the second show against Triple H. I mean, so it was almost like. The first crowd and the crowd for the first show was completely different. For the second show, it's the same exact people. So it was a very unique atmosphere.
Let's go over both of the shows here very quickly. Lots to talk about. It opened up with Vince coming out, and as you noted, doing this promo about how Donald Trump is no longer with us, but he's forced a draft, which, by the way, involved other brands that he did not own. And
yeah. No. He said it was he did a trade. It wasn't called a... I remember that he didn't call it a draft. He called it a 15-person trade.
A trade.
It was a trade, yeah.
Either way, why Trump doesn't own the other brand, so why would they have to, you know, do this trade if they didn't want to?
There's no logic whatsoever. I got to tell you something, too, because there were a bunch of people who were at the show who came up to me that were in Sacramento last night, and I asked every single one of them. Now, I go like, did anyone in the building, I'm sure there were people in the building, but did anyone understand the scramble match? And every single person that I asked said, nobody around me did. They didn't understand why people weren't eliminated when they were getting pinned, and I said, well, that was never the rules. But they absolutely, nobody in that building had a clue what was going on in that first match last night. So, you know, they're way, way over the heads of their audience, you know, right now, especially the people who go to the live shows, because the people who go to the live shows... I mean, the other thing I could tell you about that is that my impression was very few watched SmackDown, ECW, or Superstars. They seemed pretty familiar with Raw, but the perfect example was when Gail Kim came out in the second show. When Gail Kim came out, everyone around me was going like, when did she come from TNA? So they knew her from TNA, they didn't know her from SmackDown. And she's been on SmackDown for months now.
I'm shocked they knew her from TNA, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, it's Ringside fans.
Well, yeah.
Ringside fans, but that's another thing. Ringside fans don't watch SmackDown. So, I mean, like, you know, so but it was just a lot of interesting A lot of interesting crowd reactions of the night, I guess. But the other one was that nobody's a superstar except for John Cena. But it was just really clear that good crowd, but it's like nobody's really over, and there's no emotional attachment to anything that's going on. It's kind of like you're watching it, sitting there, kind of being entertained, cheering boo, but you don't really feel it or mean it, you know. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's just how it is.
So the other deal was that Trump has commanded that there must be a special guest host every week. Even though he's gone, Vince is forced to abide by it. Maybe this was part of the deal when he bought it for double the money or whatever. But anyway, the guest host this week was Big Dave Batista, back already.
Yeah.
So great to be back after all these days. And he signed a tournament, four-man tournament, to determine who would face Orton at the Night of the Champions pay-per-view, with Miz versus Cena and MVP versus Orton.
MVP versus Triple H.
Triple H, I'm sorry, that's right. And Orton and Legacy came out, and Orton said, you shouldn't have come back. We should come down and beat you up. And Dave threatened to fire them. And then later he told Legacy that if they came down to the ring during Orton's match, he would fire them as well. And so that was that. And he also announced that he made mention of the fact that they were doing a trade, but didn't bother saying who'd been traded. And he said in the main event, Orton was going to have to face three of the five in a gauntlet match. And that was that. And by the way, I went to WWE.com right after Batista announced his trade, and they had absolutely no details on the trade whatsoever. So
they weren't going to put anything up until after
a giant mystery.
No, yeah, they weren't going to put up until after the show was over because they wanted the three guys coming out to all be a mystery.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could still announce what five guys there are because it's only three of them are going to be mysteries.
Yeah, but they didn't want to announce that until after the show was over.
All right.
That was the I understand that.
Hunter and MVP in a tournament match. Hunter was selling that he had only one leg and was limping around and couldn't do a thing.
Was that leg injury from like last night?
Yeah.
Or something? Okay.
And
that's
he still
got, because I figured it. No, you know, nobody understood why he was limping though.
Yeah. Still got the pin. So sucks to be MVP.
Yeah. MVP, like I said, not over a lick live.
Yeah.
And Triple H, he felt in this show, unlike the second show, when he came out, it felt like a guy who used to be a star. And, you know, you kind of get that reaction like he's a star, but he's a past star, not a current star. It was weird. Like, it wasn't like he wasn't over, but he wasn't over like a big star. He was kind of over like a high mid-carder, I would say. Or maybe slightly high mid-carder, not even a top mid-carder.
We had Jericho and Edge doing a promo with the Unified titles, and this led to a match with the Colognes, and I need to see Edge and Jericho on, like, every show, because I thought this match was really fun, and Jericho and Edge are a great team, and anyway, it was kind of a complicated finish. Carlito went for a springboard, Jericho shoved Primo into the ropes, Carlito crashed and burned, ate the spear for the pin, and I enjoyed this.
Yeah, that was easily the best match on the first show. A really good finish. There were a lot of there were a lot of missed spots with Carlito and even with Primo being out of position early on. But and they were, you know, when they took the commercial break, this was hilarious. When they took the commercial break, and this was different from the other shows. I mean, the other matches when they went to segments. When they did the commercial break, they did nothing. I mean, Edge and Jericho just stood outside the ring and like waited for their cue to get back. But the finish was really good, and the match was. They got the fans into the match. It was the second most over match of the night. And, the whole thing was to build the setup of Carlito going heel on Primo, which happened in the second show.
Boy, that was rushed, by the way.
Everything's being rushed.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Cena and Miz in a tournament match. I guess this was the match they were supposed to have the night before they got their time cut to 5 minutes. And
it's a lot better match.
Yeah,
they actually did what they should have done on the night before.
They tried to do what they did with like Edge and Morrison, but this was Cena and Miz, so it wasn't quite as good. But they tried. They gave Miz a lot, and Cena finally made his comeback, hit his moves, STF submission. So, next week, nothing ever changes. Triple H and Cena for the title shot, which, of course, we'll get to in a moment.
I wonder what happens to Miz, because, you know, Miz was not even on the second show.
Uh-oh.
So, I don't know what the deal was there. He when he came out, I mean, nobody took him seriously in this match.
Shocking.
I mean, he had to do 10 straight minutes of offense, and after about 10 minutes, the people were kind of, they did start getting into it a little bit, but I mean, it took forever for the people to take. I mean, the first 5 minutes, he's just pounding on him, and people are just like, it's like they just weren't into it at all. I mean, I should say they were into Cena, but they just weren't into the match. But after, at some point, they kind of like started getting into the match. So it was, you know, I guess if you beat on a guy for 12 straight minutes or something, sooner or later they're going to go, maybe there's a match going on.
We had Legacy unraveling backstage, and Ted basically said, everybody, don't worry. Next week, the Million Dollar Man is going to be the special guest host of Raw. And Randy was like, well, how's that going to help me? So apparently he knew trouble was coming.
Yeah.
We had the Divas Fatal 4-Way with Kelly, Beth, Rosa, and Mickey, where the winner got Maryse at Night of the Champions. And I don't know about you, and I don't know about Live. You talked a little bit about Rosa, but this fucking sucked, and it went on forever.
It didn't seem that long, but it did suck.
Oh my God, it just seemed like it went on about 20 minutes.
Yeah, it didn't feel long. Yeah, there was a lot of out of position stuff, but Rosa was just terrible. I mean,
yeah.
I was feeling bad because she was terrible in a way where she was going to get hurt or she was going to hurt someone by being in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
They got to get her out of the ring. I mean, that's the one thing. The other three were I don't know. I guess Mickey was okay.
Well, the problem was a lot of them were taking turns working with Rosa.
Yeah, I know. She's hopeless.
She's been
around for years. She can walk to the ring and she can talk, which of course she's never done or hasn't done lately. There's things she can do, but wrestling is not one of them.
No.
And it was pretty good. Now Maryse is you know, I mean, we know this, but she's really got something.
Yes.
I mean, she isn't much of a wrestler, but she carries herself like such a star. And not that many people on the brand really do. And she does, she really does.
And her on commentary was the highlight of this match.
I bet it was. I didn't hear her, but, you know, so.
Then we had Big Show and Kofi, where they said if Show won, he'd get a future Intercontinental title shot. And, like, Show beats the hell out of him forever. They end up outside. They're brawling. The ref's counting. Kofi sends Show into the post, and I thought, oh, Kofi's going to slide in and get a count-out win over this giant. How great for this youngster.
No.
And then, of course, they both got counted out. What? Why?
That wasn't very good either.
No.
Yeah. I think they're doing a three-way for the title with Evan Bourne, Kofi, and Big Show. That's what it felt like. They didn't announce that, but
Well, that's good because both these guys lost, and
Evan lost.
Evan lost as well.
And the show later, but then he comes back.
The three losers can face off for the title.
Yeah.
This is like that Rey Mysterio match at WrestleMania a couple years back with the three way. Remember that?
But they had one of the better matches on that show.
Yeah, but they set it up.
Yeah, they took turns making sure everybody got beat before the WrestleMania.
They beat everybody one at a time over and over, and that's how they built this up. And it was like, wow, we can see who sucks the least in this match.
Yeah.
Then we had the gauntlet match, which was Orton against three men. The first ended up being Evan Bourne, and Orton gave him a lot. But then, this was the best.
Nobody knew who Evan Bourne was.
Wow.
I mean, like I said, you could tell that people don't watch ECW. I mean, it's just like, who is this guy when he came out? You know, I was kind of excited. You know, the match was, it was all right. You know, I mean, considering what it had to be. You know, Orton had to win. You know, I mean, it's not the way you would want to debut a new guy, but whatever.
I have to bring this up because I know you couldn't hear the commentary, but I don't want to talk about this too much, but there was an argument on our board last week about Mike Tenay. And this argument that Mike Tenay was like this worst announcer of all time. And I, of course, will argue till my dying day that Michael Cole is worse. Michael Cole in this match, you know the RKO off the middle rope?
Yeah, the finish.
Running Bulldog, he called it.
Well, whatever.
How can you screw that up?
There's no answer to that because it's only been the hold he's been using for how many straight years?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was a bad one. Then Jack Swagger came out, and got in the ring, gave Orton a slam, then stood on the apron and got counted out.
That was weird.
And he said, I've always liked you. You're a good guy. He wanted to make a lasting impression. He shook his hand. He walked out, and I thought, great, Swagger's next in legacy.
What do you think?
Thought too much about this. And then Mark Henry came out and said the same thing, but this time he got in the ring at 5 and licked his lips, beat the shit out of Randy, and pinned him with the World's Strongest Slam. Finish actually got a big pop on TV, it seemed.
Yeah, because the finish, it wasn't so much the finish, but right after the finish. I think that people were shocked by the finish, but then when they saw that like he had turned babyface and he had beaten Randy Orton, it was like, wow,
they
were kind of into it. Except, and I think what happened was, then they realized it was Mark Henry.
Well,
so it was weird.
Now that brings us to the second show here, and of course we've already talked all about it, so I suppose we don't have to say these are spoilers. If you're listening this far, you're well aware. Ted Sr. was in charge, and I'll just start listing these segments, and you can go over them since you've seen them. Opening segment with Ted Sr.
Yes.
I was going to say, you know,
Just say what happened and I'll fill in the blank.
All right, fine. So Ted Sr. came out and a lot of people, I guess, thought he was going to be a heel. And
No, they didn't. Ted comes out with Cody and Ted Jr. And I think that they figured if they send him out with Cody and Ted Jr., everyone would boo him. And they cheered him. He probably, with the exception of John Cena, he got the biggest pop of the whole show. They love, you know, it's like this returning legend. Everybody gave him this huge reaction. So then, you know, he's talking as a heel. You know, he's just, and they're just cheering everything he's saying. And somewhere in there, I don't remember what he said, but they kind of figured out that...
maybe you all suck?
Yeah, something like that. Or maybe... you know, he mentioned that that Ted and Cody were going to win the tag team titles from Edge and Jericho at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And at some point they turned on him, and, you know, he was doing his Million Dollar Man thing. And then he told Cody that Cody would wrestle Mark Henry later in the show, which Cody didn't like. And then he told Ted that, you know, Ted would wrestle Randy Orton later in the show because he said that, like, you know, I saw what happened at the pay-per-view. And even though you made up, I know deep down you want to, you still have to prove who's best and blah, blah, blah. So Ted Jr. was really upset about that. So that was that segment.
We had Edge and Jericho against the Colognes non-title match. Edge and Jericho won again. And then we had the big turn with Carlito beating the hell out of Primo and,
yeah, this was not nearly as good as, the match that you saw tonight, not even close. But it didn't have any missed moves, but it just went like, it went 5 minutes, and the finish was Primo accidentally distracted the ref, so Jericho gave Carlito the code breaker, and then Edge speared Carlito and got the pin, and Carlito was just mad because they lost 2 weeks in a row, and Primo screwed up him both times. Now, Primo was pretty damn good in this match when he made the hot tag, and Carlito was, not so good.
He was Carlito.
Yeah, he missed. He did kind of miss one or two things, but in the first show, I remember he missed a bunch of stuff. But still, this match was it was okay, nothing special.
We had Gail and Mickey beating Maryse and Alicia when Gail pinned Maryse, so I don't know if that means three-way at the pay-per-view or if they just...
That was really weird because...
I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, you would think that Mickey would have gotten the pin. Gail wasn't too bad, you know. It's all right. Nothing, certainly much better than that women's match in the first hour. That's all, you know.
Well, it would be impossible for it to be much worse, I would think.
Yeah.
We had... DiBiase, that being Senior, and Cody doing a little deal, and Ted was very upset, I guess, because Dusty is in the Hall of Fame and he is not, and he threatened to put Cody in polka dots.
Yeah, well, there was a discussion, and it was backstage, and it was kind of hard to hear, but yeah, he did do that, and he was mad that Dusty was in the Hall of Fame, and he mentioned how he was so much better a wrestler than Dusty Rhodes ever was, which actually is kind of true. And Cody was trying to get out of the match with Mark Henry, but to no avail. He did not get out of the match.
He did get hit with the World's Strongest Slam and then apparently walked out for the countout. How do you walk out after taking the World's Strongest Slam?
He rolled out to the floor and then he just walked to the back.
They could not beat Cody Rhodes.
It was like the first or second move of the match. I mean, it was just a, you know, like a 30-second deal. You know, it was weak. It sucked. And Mark Henry wasn't over a lick this time.
Well, Jesus, you can beat Randy Orton, they won't let you beat Cody Rhodes.
I think they just wanted, you know, I think that the new kick is heels walking out. They think it's good heat.
Oh.
So it's like everything with WWE, like they'll come up with like a good idea and they'll do it like over and over and over again until it's just like, you know, just so beaten to death. And this was, you know, an example of it. I mean, we just had Swagger do the same thing.
And we had Orton beat Ted with the RKO. How was it?
It was a good match. 9.5 minutes. Ted got a lot of near falls. It was similar to a match when Triple H was in his prime, you know, where he would wrestle someone and you know, give them a bunch of near falls, but then beat him clean with his hold. That type of a match.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Then we had the MVP lounge with Swagger and MVP basically starting a new feud, I guess making fun of each other's colleges and that sort of thing. And
MVP didn't go to college.
Well, MVP made fun of...
He made fun of the University of Oklahoma, and then Swagger said, you went to Florida State, and then it was... But, you know, he meant Florida State prison. And then he started ripping on him for the prison thing, and then MVP does the speech, you know... It actually was pretty entertaining because he does this long speech about, yes, I hung with the wrong crowd and I paid my debt and I learned and now I'm out here going around teaching kids not to do what I did. And while he's doing this, Jack Swagger is just like yawning and, you know what I mean? it was really pretty cool.
And, well, it makes sense because they had a bunch of SmackDown Your Reading or whatever the new thing is for the summer and tons and tons of clips of MVP at all these schools with these kids and books and that sort of thing. So
that is what he did in prison, was read books all the time, from what I understand.
Well,
watch show notes tapes that they smuggled in.
There you go. And Swagger doesn't fight criminals, he said.
Yeah, well, MVP took like his jewelry off and everything, and he just goes, the difference between me and you is I never back down from a fight, and then like Swagger starts backing down and goes, I don't fight criminals. And then he walked off.
We had a Ted and Ted segment, and Junior slapped Senior, and I guess
that was pretty good. Ted Senior was pretty good in the segment.
Yeah.
It was like he was the father trying to teach his son, and his son is just completely like fucking up.
Yeah.
And he's really sad, you know, kind of like Brian Blair or something.
Oh, boy. We had Evan Bourne and Kofi Kingston, non-title match, Shooting Star Press. Evan won.
Yeah, it's like a three-minute match. It just came out of nowhere. It just gives him the Shooting Star Press.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm thinking like, well, he's going to get a U.S. title shot. And then Big Show came out and just destroyed those two guys. You know, I mean, exactly what you would expect.
Sure. And then, of course, the Triple H Cena match. I guess just under a pay-per-view quality, you wrote, and no contest finish. So it's a three-way, according to Ted Senior, at the Night of the Champions show.
Yeah, real good match. You know, Triple H completely, you know, 75%, 80% cheered. John Cena, before the match, said... we're going to give you, you know, a WrestleMania match. That's like the theme, I guess, is that it's like a WrestleMania main event, but it's on Raw. And, you know, it's funny because when he's in with Triple H, John Cena looks like a really good worker. Yet my eyes, from everything I've seen for the last 3 months, tells me otherwise. But he was really good. And Triple H, who hasn't, you know, who's been not that great with Orton, kind of boring and everything, he was really good, too. This is like, they look great. So that was pretty cool. And then there was during that match. What was it? They just like, you know, reversals off of their moves and all that. And then the finish. I mean, the match got really pretty darn heated. And you know, like the Orton and It was Rhodes and DiBiase did the run in. And, I mean, it was like the most lame, weak-ass finish. You know what I'm saying? It's just like they just build it up. They just run in, and the referee just calls for the DQ, and it was just so weak. But, I mean, it set up what they were going to do, and I kind of figured that, you know, when I'm watching this match, I'm figuring it's a draw because, you know, they're not going to let one beat the other on TV. But after it was over and after the show was off the air, John Cena's like thanking the crowd for sitting through two shows, and you got to see this great night, and, you know, you should be happy and this and that. And then he just goes, and all of you got to see the greatest match you've ever seen in your life. And I'm just, it's just like, God, I can't believe he just said that.
The greatest match they'd
the
ever
greatest
seen?
Greatest match that you have ever seen in your life.
Wow.
Live. He mentioned live. So you may have seen a better one on television. I'm just thinking, like, I have seen in this arena 50 matches better than the last one. And I'm not, and there was a match on this show with Carlito in it that was almost as good.
And you've seen fights.
Oh, God, you're comparing to fights. I've seen this, you know, atmosphere-wise, it's not even comparable to Strikeforce. I mean, it's, you know, not even in the same realm anymore. I mean, and I wouldn't have said that about the February show. February show was a pretty hot show, but this one, you can just see it's just that whole thing of it's a crowd that is, you know, they're entertained by it, but they don't take nothing seriously, and they're not emotionally in any of it. You know, they're just kind of sitting there, and, you know, it's kind of like we used to like this 10 years ago, and it was cool, and now we're here again. And I don't know where all the kids went because they weren't here. You know, and it's Monday night, and it's summer.
It's summer.
No school tomorrow, and the show started at 5:30 here, and it's Raw. I don't know why there were no kids, but there were no kids. Or not no kids, but, I mean, like, I was shocked at how few kids there were.
Yeah. Well, I was shocked that same way when I went to Portland. I mean, there were no kids there either.
Yeah.
And I guess we had Superstar Santino and Brian Kendrick. What a Styles Clash that sounds like.
Yeah. Brian Kendrick's offense looked like shit, too.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so weak. I mean, it's just like he throws these kicks that, like, that just barely touch. Santino was funny, too, because it was another example. I don't even know if these people watch Raw, because Santino came out. And he came out and got booed. But during the match, they kind of figured out that he was the babyface since Kendrick was clearly the heel. And at the end, they cheered Santino a lot. And, you know, they chanted his name and everything like that. And he wasn't on either Raw show. That's too bad, because he's kind of entertaining. So, but the match wasn't any good.
Let's start taking some calls here on this show, and we'll see what people thought about Raw. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Santino calling from Singapore.
Santino, what a coincidence. What's going on?
Yeah. Brian, Dave, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, a couple of questions. What's happened to Tomko?
Tomko is wrestling for Hustle right now.
Okay.
In Japan.
Sorry, go ahead.
He just said in Japan.
Tomko's wrestling for Hustle in Japan.
Okay. And has Vince gone completely insane?
You know, after tonight, I kind of would think so.
Wait a second. After tonight, of all nights, you've decided he must be going insane?
No, it's just he's making all these changes all the time for, like, you know, it's just really weird because it was very much. Now, the thing with tonight's show is I felt like it was TNA and that they threw so many things out that there's no way anyone could keep track of everything that was thrown out, you know, with all the turns and this and that. But, yeah, I think that he's, I think he's just kind of losing it.
Yeah, I would have. There are times I've thought that, but usually it's things significantly worse than this, for example, but
yeah.
I can kind of see your point. Let's take this call. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Jamie in South Carolina. How's it going?
What's going on?
Not much. I had a question for you guys. Brian, I know you were there live. I was wondering if Dave had a chance to see the Kenta-Davy Richards match and if either of you had a chance to see the 622 NOAH main event, the Kenta and Kenta and Go versus Kensuke Nakajima match?
No, in fact, I was hoping I would get the tape today, and I didn't get it yet. So I haven't seen that tag match. And the Brian saw the Kenta match. I remember him telling me it was 4.5 stars type match, right?
Yeah, it was 4.5, and had they not screwed up the finish, I think it would have been maybe even better than Shawn and Undertaker. And apparently on the DVD, the edited version, they actually fixed the finish. So.
Oh, that's always good.
Yeah. So they edited out the two botched spots in a row, and apparently it is, in fact, really awesome when it's fixed.
I think
the finish looks...
I got a bunch of DVDs in the mail today, so maybe...
Probably in there.
Wow. Okay, I'll make sure to try to watch that the next day or two.
The finish looks a little odd, because he kind of, like, it's a very obvious edit, especially if you're looking for it, but it's still just a great match. Words can't describe how great it is. And the 622, the Noah match, is one of the greatest things I've seen all year. I mean, it's exactly what Noah needed to, you know, in the wake of everything that's happened, it's exactly what Noah needed. It was the exact main event that needed to be put on, and I really hope that it kind of starts a turning point for the company, because it was just absolutely fantastic.
Problem is that it's almost impossible to be a turning point, because no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Except for the people that were in the building and the, you know, the people who watch the cable show, and that's the audience they already have anyway. So it's hard. Noah's in a real hard position. You know, everyone in Japan's in a hard position anyway, but Noah's in it's pretty darn tough, especially because, you know, they still want to run Budokan regularly with no TV, and you know, I mean, the product, you know, product's usually good. I mean, whenever I watch a Noah Budokan show, it's like, when it's over, I always go, like, this is really good wrestling. This was like, I would love to be at this show live. I always think that, you know, just, they're long, but, you know, and some of the matches early on aren't always the greatest, but by the time that show's over, you get, like, you know, three or four really hot matches, and it's just it's like a well-produced wrestling show.
You know, it's going to be interesting when you watch that, that Kenna match, the ROH match, because it's like, I watched it before Misawa died, you know what I mean? And there wasn't, like, so much, I don't know. They do a couple of spots, like, off the apron to the floor. And, I mean, even at the time, I was like, you guys have got to be legitimately stupid or something. I mean, I don't think they're legitimately stupid, but Jesus, these things that they were doing, it was like, in a million years, I would never do these spots. And here they are doing them, I don't know. It's just like you may see it differently after we know what happened to Misawa. But I mean, at the time, it was quite the deal, to the point where
I was always uncomfortable with the like certain things that would be done in those matches. You know, like, I mean, I was never comfortable with head dropping. I was never comfortable with I'm never comfortable, I don't care what promotion, with, you know, hard chair shots to the head. I mean, when the chairs are to the back, it's cool, or when the chair's blocked. But I just think that, like, I know, I mean, people always go, oh, if you put it to the top of the forehead, the top of the forehead's thick, so you can make a lot of noise, and you really don't hurt the guy. But there's too many guys have gotten concussions from chair shots to the head, you know, the real hard ones. And it's just like, if you don't do it hard, people, like, you know, kind of like, they crap all over it. And if you do it really hard, you're risking injuring the guy. So it's like, I just hate seeing them.
In the 2003 Misawa Kobashi match, it was 2003. The last
really great one was March 2003.
What did they do off the apron? There was some crazy spot. Was it the orange bomb off the apron or something?
That might have been the Kobashi Akiyama match, where they did that really crazy spot off the apron.
Well, anyway, they did pretty much the exact same spot in that Kenta Davey match, and it was like
they may have done a the half Nelson suplex maybe off the apron, right?
Something just...
Or off the stage. I don't think it was off the apron. It might have been off the stage to the floor.
There was something off the stage in 2003, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
But anyway, these guys did the spot, and we were front row, and, like, they landed right in front of me with this just disgusting thud, and I thought the match had to be over. It was like, there's no way these guys are continuing this match, and they did. And, the finish is going to look a little goofy because... You know, they were trying to do a reverse go to sleep, and it failed twice, so he did a regular one. So basically, I guess he's going to hoist him up in a reverse position, but somehow in the middle of the move, he's going to magically do a 180. But, you know, it'll be fine. Let's take this call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Mark from London, Ontario.
Mark, what's going on?
I was just, I missed the pay-per-view. How did Miz look?
Miz didn't have a chance. They booked the match where he looked terrible.
He was slaughtered.
Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't that he was terrible, but they booked it for him to look terrible. He looked much better on TV tonight, but boy, you know, I don't know what their plans are for him because clearly, you know, Cena's now working with Orton and Triple H.
Yeah.
So I don't know where Miz is fitting in right now.
How did that match go? Are we seeing more Orton and Triple H?
Well, we're going to see a three-way next with Orton, Triple H, and Cena.
Yay.
You sound excited.
I was excited.
Yeah.
I was excited watching MVP get no reaction and then go and lose. You know when you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, what the hell can you do? As far as other news from, like, the last day or so, God, I don't really know what we've got. The Lawler arrest update.
Yeah.
Really isn't a whole lot. And really, any other big news?
Strikeforce, and I talked to Scott Coker last night, and he said he's hopeful of the whole TV card being announced by Wednesday. And there's only two matches that are official, which is Chrono Cyborg and Josh Thompson, Gilbert Melendez. Aaron Tohill's on the card. I know they're trying to put together Nick Diaz and Joe Riggs in a rematch of their UFC match, which was actually a pretty good match in UFC. And it'd probably be a pretty good match now, too, although probably not a good night for Joe Riggs. Although you never know with Nick Diaz. You know, but I would say probably not a good night for Joe Riggs. And what was the other one that they're looking at? Alistair Overeem and Brett Rogers. It just depends on the condition of Overeem's hand. If he's going to be ready by August 15th, then that's the match. And if he's not, then I guess they would probably have to do it in October, which would be the next big show.
Did Scott Coker go to Raw?
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't ask him if he was going, but I didn't see him there. And I was sitting with all the, the people from the arena.
Yeah.
So he would have been with that group if he would have gone, most likely. So I would say it's a pretty good chance he didn't. You know, I'm pretty sure he didn't go.
Did you bring Frank Shamrock or another shooter with you in case somebody went over the rail?
No, I didn't. You know what? I probably should have called him because he's a fan, and I brought other friends. I should have called Frank. I didn't even think of it.
Ridiculous.
I know. I mean, but yeah, nobody was going to come after me, so it's no big deal. I didn't need muscle like Mickey Rourke to sit at that. Oh dear God. It was interesting. You know, definitely. Not a lot of people, but there were the few people who knew about Lillian Garcia leaving were making a lot of noise.
Yeah. yeah.
She was actually, I saw more reaction, not like, you know, crowd cheers or anything like that. She got the same reaction she would always get, you know, like the ring announcer reaction. But just when she would be in there, every time she went in the ring, there were a lot of drunk guys making comments about her more than usual. And they weren't making it about any of the other women. I don't know why, but it just that I did notice that.
All right, let's take one last call here on the show. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air.
I don't know that he is.
What a fail that was.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wait here for a second. So you there were actually people that were aware that she was leaving?
A few. You could hear some people because... like you would hear, it wasn't like there was a chant, please don't go, or anything like that, but you might hear like one person every now and then go, Lillian, please don't go. And she like kind of smiled and acknowledged it.
Yeah. All right, let's try this phone again. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from? What a failure that is. All right, that's the last of the call attempts this evening.
All right.
Let's do a couple of questions. We'll wrap it up. What do you got?
All right, let me see. I got a million questions here. When Dana White or whoever keeps trying to get MMA legalized in the state of New York or any banned state for that matter, why don't they go before Congress or the state Supreme Court or whomever they have a chance to speak to and ask why MMA is considered barbaric and wrong, even though I've never seen any children at a show? while boxing is legal and pro wrestling is deemed okay, even though children are present, and there have been scantily clad naked to naked women, live sex acts, sex with dead people, grown men dropping their pants and having other grown men kiss their bare ass, guys being hit with chair steps, sledgehammers, man-on-woman violence, and profuse bleeding, just name a few things. These examples need to be brought up and ask why, if they're allowed and permitted for children, and why are trained professional fighters not allowed? If an age limit was put on the audience attending, how do you think it would affect WWE's attendance? Yeah, if they like had an age limit, it would wouldn't have affected them that much tonight, but there are some nights where it probably would have like taking 50% of the crowd away. You cannot use logic when it comes to MMA. I mean, we, you and I, Brian, can use logic, but it's never going to fly in the legislature. I mean, I am so mad. You know, again, this is not from being an MMA fan, and no one else has said this. I've written this, but I am so mad that boxing in New York taxes 3% with a maximum of $50,000. And the reason they do is because New York and Madison Square Garden, about 8 years ago, started losing all the big fights to Vegas. So they lowered the tax so more big fights would come to New York. And they still don't really get that many big fights because the big fights still go to Vegas. But MMA is getting taxed 8% with no ceiling. If there's like a $4 million gate, you know, they got to pay 8% of $4 million.
$320,000.
It'd be $320,000. Pretty
good.
And that same $4 million gate for boxing, you would pay $50,000 in tax because of $50,000 ceiling. And to me, it's like, I don't care if it's 8% or 3% or $50,000 ceiling. Whatever it is, it should be the same for everyone. You know, in pro wrestling, it's 5%. You know, I mean, you could argue pro wrestling's a different animal because it's what it is and should be taxed different. Although I don't buy that argument. I think that all three should be taxed the same. That should be your athletic tax. And it's like, why are there three different sets of athletic taxes for three different sports? It's a bunch of shit. And, you know, this whole New York argument is complete. It's just completely ridiculous that, you know, why there's even an argument about MMA in this day and age, you know, that, you know, on, you know, why it shouldn't be allowed when they allowed, you know, I mean, they allowed wrestling when it was at its most raunchy, which in fact, you know, the whole thing that we don't want to teach kids appealed to kids, whereas MMA really doesn't, you know, appeal to kids nearly as much. And if you're saying it's like, you know, encouraging violence, it's like, you know, what's the difference between boxing? And there's no age limit on attending boxing. It's not like, you know, it just drives me crazy, you know, that whatever the standard should be, it should be an equal standard for all. And if the standard is that boxing is banned, then MMA can be banned. That's fine. You know, kickboxing needs to be banned then, too. If you're going to ban them all, ban them all. If one of them is legal, they all should be legal unless you can prove that one of them is inherently more dangerous than the other, and there's no stats to back that up. You know, because the most dangerous of the three is the kickboxing, and kickboxing's not, you know, I don't know anywhere where kickboxing's banned. So it's just, the whole thing is just ridiculous. But yeah, you're saying, like, use logic and explain. No one listens to logic. They don't want to hear facts. They don't want a study that just goes, there are, you know, more concussions in boxing than there are in MMA, although the gap is certainly narrowing. But the fact is there still is. Or, you know, that people have died in boxing regularly, and in MMA it's happened, but it's very rare. I mean, that Riley went out there and said that there have been 13 to 14 deaths in MMA, and the MMA people are lying about the number, and it's just like, you know, okay, it's one thing to, like, say, okay, I think there could be this and this and that, but he's just, like, made up some number, or he attributed deaths in some other sport and pretended they were MMA deaths. I don't know what he's doing. People should just go, I don't understand how you get by, like, a guy can go and say that without, like, the media in that state just going, like, wait a minute, you are just full of shit, because there's Sammy Vasquez in Houston, Texas, and Douglas Dedge in the Ukraine 11 or 12 years ago, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there may be more, but that's it. And how many deaths do we have per year in boxing? You know, foremost every year. You know, so it's just like, if you, how can you bring up the deaths and just go, well, you know, and not, you know, again, not make an equal share. How many people, you know, Misawa just died in the ring. There have been more deaths in the ring in professional wrestling than there have been in MMA. Now, of course, there's a lot more professional wrestling. That's why. But, I mean, from even on a percentage basis, it's probably comparable. So it's like you're gonna ban it for danger. You can go ban professional wrestling, too. And the whole thing is ludicrous. Anyway, so that's my
You need to speak before the legislature.
I've spoken before legislatures before.
You need to do it again. Well, this rant.
They turned deaf ears. I did a completely different rant for the Florida State Legislature about 17 years ago, and when I was done, I realized that I will never do that again because it didn't matter what I said. There were guys like napping.
Sure.
You know, they just didn't. They didn't want to hear it. They weren't going to believe it. They just went to sleep. You know, they don't. You know.
Well, everybody, that is it for today, and Wednesday is our next show, and it's going to be a big one. Bruno Sammartino is going to be on the program, and it's going to be a great time. He's been on before. If you've you can check the archives, actually, for the last Bruno show. And
that was an awesome show.
Yeah, check that one out, and get prepared for this Wednesday. It's a good primer for this second show, and that is the plan, so make sure you check that out. And tomorrow on Figure Four Daily, Sanjay Dutt is going to be on the show, so we'll talk to him about a lot of things and find out what his marital status is as well.
And a lot of people I need to know.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking about that, so we'll get confirmation tomorrow. So
okay.
That is the plan. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you again after a while.